This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Thousands say stop frisking our communities. No to racial and ethnic profiling.
Thousands upon thousands in New York City marched in the Father's Day Stop and Frisk March in protest of that policy of Mayor Bloomberg and its implementation by Police Commissioner Kelly.
We are here with, every time I walk by with him, somebody says, that's the baddest Latin jazz artist in the city. So my brother, tell us who you are and what brings you here today.
My name is Bobby Sanabria. Hello to everyone out there listening. I'm here in solidarity with the NAACP, of which I'm a member, and 1199 and everybody else that wants to stop this policy of stop and frisk that the New York City Police Department has initiated. So we're against this policy that was initiated that really puts a lot of mistrust in the community, because it's been proven that the stop and frisk policy, when initiated in any community, makes that community fear the police. So the march is still organizing. We hope everybody comes down, and thank you for supporting us in the fight against the Grammys. We got the Latin Jazz category initiated back this week. They finally relented.
We know you're in a rush and they're pushing us along for the march to get underway, but Bobby Sanabria, what about secure communities also? The impact on the Latino communities, the policies of ICE that are dragnetting people into mass deportation.
This institutes, unfortunately, an aura of mistrust with the police. And these policies of stop and frisk and you stand your ground, et cetera, especially the stand your ground law down in the southern part region of the United States and Midwest, have initiated terrible actions. So I believe the march is going to end at Gracie Mansion in front of the mayor's office, which I find ironic because I was performing at Gracie Mansion the other night. But what we need to do, it's a moral obligation for us to speak out.
For people who say this isn't about profiling, that this has nothing to do with the fact that people are black or Latino, what do you say to them?
I've been a victim of this myself, just sitting in my car in the Bronx where I live. So, but this policy is wrong.
Bobby Sanabria, your latest album?
Is Multiverse, and it'll be out in August, and it's inspired by the writings of the great Mexican author, Octavio Paz. Thanks so much.
Thank you for being you. We're here with brothers who are from the Laborers International Union, Local 79. Why don't you tell us who you are and why you think it's so critical to take Father's Day to be here on this march in response to stopping, stop and frisk.
My name is Barry Smith. I'm a laborer for Local 79, and I'm actually from Brownsville. I'm totally against the stop and frisk policy because I feel that it exercises racism. That's towards against the Afro-Americans and the Latinos. I'm self-experienced. I used to box, I used to train, so sometimes I would come out the gym at 11 o'clock at night with a hoodie on, a pair of sweatpants on, and it would cause me, because I fitted a certain criteria, to be stopped, frisked, and talk to derogatory and be actually humiliated in the middle of the street as far as Texas schools being shown and things of that nature. So I'm totally against it.
Hi, my name is Stephen Jones, and I am from Local 79, as well as I'm part of an organization called 100 BCW. That's 100 Black Men in Construction. And what we do, we help our community. You know, we give back to our community. And this here, this stop and frisk thing, I fully support this because I'm a construction worker. I will have boots on with my heart and still get stopped and frisked. And I don't understand that. So that got to stop, you know, because if you got working people going to work, you know, why would you stop and search them? Why would you hassle them? I don't understand that.
Something I want to say that's very important. One of the reasons why this touches us personally is because if you look at our members here, right, we have a lot of members who probably at one time in their life were considered throwaways. They had a rough life, maybe from the reentry population, folks who were from a certain sector of the population, but now they are foremen, they are shop stewards, they are excellent citizens who participate and do everything that is expected of them. But it's these brothers and sisters who are trying to get away from that, that is, it actually touches in a unique way.
Let me ask you a question. This is the first time in a long time that I've seen lots of unions come out on social issues. Civil rights issues, but there's other issues also in the community. You think we should be doing more of this?
Most definitely. I mean, this is one of the original purposes of unions, to grasp the issues of the communities. And our members live in all these communities. So it's a no-brainer. We should definitely be at the forefront of issues like this.
I believe, like he stated, I totally agree with him. But the new labor movement is the civil rights movement now. You know, and unions should band together. Like, for instance, I brought three generations of my son here today. You know what I mean? So that they don't have to be humiliated and go through the things that I have once went through. So, yes, I do agree that we should band more together and be more effective on social issues.
And I agree with my two colleagues as well. And this is why I'm in this organization called the 100 Black Construction Workers, because we deal with a lot of issues like this. We talk to politicians, we get involved with our community, and we try to make the politicians accountable for what they say they're going to do.
So 100 Black Construction Workers, you know, is a new entity, a new organization, which is to build the structure and the economical level of Afro-Americans and Latinos, a people of struggle.
And to educate our community.
We're here with Yousef Salam, and I can't help but mention, and I'm sure Yousef knows it, because one, actually you're pointing. You tell me what I'm referring to, Yousef. What is that?
Lincoln Correctional Facility. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that that's for nonviolent so-called criminals in the community. Basically, right off of Central Park North, 110th Street between Lenox Avenue and Fifth Avenue. You know, it's funny because I lived in Schaumburg right across the way, and I would always look out the window and see. This is before I got arrested and convicted for a crime I didn't commit. I would see inmates up on top of the roof working out and walking around and things like that. And I just kind of was like, wow, why are they there? What's going on? What's going through their mind and stuff? Yeah.
That used to be a school. They have converted it into a mass youth reformatory. And that's got a lot to do with, and what we're here today has a lot to do with, the mass system of incarceration, and particularly victimizing Black and Latino youth who feed that system of incarceration. So yeah, Lincoln Reformatory Correctional, and it is ironic that we're here during the Stop and Frisk March, this huge, massive private prison system established for youth. Yousef, you mentioned your own situation. Why don't we just give a brief capsule of what happened to you and why your concern is still so important and so pronounced around issues such as stop and frisk.
Back in 1989, there was a horrible crime that happened in Central Park, and ultimately, because of the housing communities that are near Central Park, the police officers in their rush to find and convict someone, they went into all of the housing communities right around Central Park and started snatching all the youth out of the community. It was not about anything being fair. Ultimately, I was one of the ones who was convicted of a crime that I didn't commit and spent 7 years of my life in prison for that crime. We became known as the Central Park Five. I mean, it's so important because overwhelmingly, we're the ones, whenever a crime is committed, they point the finger at us. And it's not right, it's not fair, it's not balanced, and it's not just.
And at this point, I know you're here with your daughter, but what do you see in your community around stop and frisk? What do we need to tell the broader communities in order to eradicate this policy, which you've already given ample indication is part of a profiling of Black and Latino youth?
Yeah, it's definitely not the way to harmonize and socialize everyone. I was reading an article earlier where it was saying, you know, the best thing to do in a community of color is to walk around and get to know folks, not victimize them from the start. We're fearful because of the history of the police department and police officers. And in New York City alone, when they can come and get a 15-year-old and convict them of a crime that they didn't commit, a crime of which I'm still being haunted by to this day, that's not the way to do things. It puts people at so much odds with each other. Automatically, young Black men, they already know that the statistics that are against us is that we're either going to be dead or in jail by the age of 21. And I was one of the ones who didn't even escape that statistic.
Do you take heart from the fact that more and more people from more and more communities are coming out to protest the stop and frisk policies and policies of profiling by the NYPD?
I definitely do. This right here is a great televising of what I call revolutionary actions, because ultimately it was always whatever they wanted the world at large to see is what they showed. But here we are together as one in a big melting pot, and it affects everybody. For people who want to make sure that we're all equally treated and we can all get along, this is where we need to be. And unfortunately, we continue to meet at places like this, whether it's Romali Graham, Trayvon Martin, Yusuf Salam, Sean Bell, and countless others. This is like the history, unfortunately, of us as a people.
And we're here with a beautiful young lady who I've kind of watched grow up, and she is now the third generation. We have Mom, Sharon Salam, and Yusuf Salam, activists, and now Rain. Rain, what do you think about what's going on here today?
I don't think that it's equal for the whites and the blacks to be doing this, because the whites don't get blamed for everything that the blacks are doing, and the blacks get blamed for something that they didn't do.
Rain, how old are you?
11.
So what do you think we're going to need to do about that?
We're going to need to help and stop all of this violent stuff.
As I said, three generations.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that Rain, my daughter, mentions it as violence, because it is a form of violence. It's a form of terrorizing us. We walk outside and automatically we're walking around as if we're in a war zone. Police look at us and we're like, uh-oh, are they going to stop us and pull us over? Or, you know, is it going to be a case of driving while black, like Sean Bell, and they're going to shoot at us or something like that? This is really, really sad and horrible in terms of the treatment that's happening to the people of color in the community.
Yusuf Salam, thank you for all that you do for all communities of righteousness and human rights and concern, particularly given the sacrifices really you have made and what you have been subject to. We're with Estela Vasquez, one of the long-term activists and a member, worker, 1199. So we're going to find out why you think it's so critical to be here today at this demonstration.
I'm a resident of East Harlem. In our neighborhood, we have one of the highest percentage of stop and frisk by NYPD. One of my nephews, about 4 weeks ago, got stopped. We had to go to the 23rd precinct, and the only reason they took him is because a white woman thought that he looked suspicious, and the cops picked him up. In the Bronx, the child of one of our members, the young man that was killed in the Bronx, the 18-year-old, Ramali Graham, is a 1199 baby. So this is affecting our youth, our children, our community, and it's time to stop it, because it's criminalizing our 14 to 24-year-old. And the money that is spent by NYPD in doing stop and frisk could be better spent educating our children and paying teachers adequate salaries so they can teach our children.
Estela, how important is it that organized labor is in the House today and having its voice heard on this issue?
Organized labor is part of the community, and it's our members' children, it's our young members who are getting stopped and criminalized by NYPD, and our members' children that are getting shot, as in the case of the Bronx, by NYPD. And this is part of our struggle. We cannot speak for the only economic issues in the workplace. We have to speak about the questions in the community, too.
Teller, I wanted to ask you also about the fact that undocumented youth and undocumented workers in general don't have to only worry about the NYPD stop and frisk, but also deportation by the Immigration Control Enforcement Agents. So how does that relate to this?
It's totally related now because of the implementation of safe communities. When somebody's arrested and held at Rikers Island, they had to notify ICE, and if the person is undocumented, even if they were stopped for a minor infraction, that puts them on the list to be deported. And we think that it's time to stop. At least we can applaud President Obama for the executive order he issued around our young people, our young undocumented students that can stay here and be able to get a temporary work permit. I think that was a tremendous victory.
Estela Vasquez, 1199, thank you. You are?
My name's Yilson Lim. I do Cop Watch with the Justice Committee.
What are the issues of stop and frisk that are so critical to draw a large number of people here today to repudiate the policies?
Stop and frisk. The most recent stats that came out, there were almost 700,000 stops in 2011. The vast majority of them were of Black and Latino folks. The vast majority of the people who were stopped were actually found to have been doing nothing wrong. From our perspective, this is an extremely discriminatory and biased tactic. Stop and frisk is also used disproportionately in low-income communities of color, in low-income communities. So at this point, the city is upset about it, and everybody is coming out here to protest it. But I think that also stop and frisk is just one example of many, many examples of discriminatory policing. We're not only out here against stop and frisk, we're out here to transform the entire policing system.
The support for the forces against stop and frisk has ballooned in the last month or two, and there have been numerous proposals that have come out from the mainstream with regard to one of them being governor's proposal with regard to decriminalization of marijuana less than 25 grams. What's your feeling about that and some of the other proposals that have come out so far? Will that solve the problem?
So I think that the fixes to the marijuana problem are a step in the right direction. I don't think that we actually think that any one policy change or any one legal change is going to solve the entire problem. The campaign that we work with, Communities United for Police Reform, is actually trying to work on many different levels. We think we need many, many legislative reforms in order to change the NYPD, but we also need to be building power in local low-income communities of color to respond to abusive policing. That's why we teach people to do cop watch. That's why we're out in the streets doing Know Your Rights trainings, giving out information, and really trying to build the capacity of low-income communities of color to protect themselves.
And just to clarify, what exactly is cop watch?
Cop watch is a practice that was started by the Black Panthers in the 70s. It's a practice in which community members go out, they exercise their legal right to monitor and document police activity. And so we do it with cameras. And we believe that doing so actually de-escalates tense police situations. It lets the police know that we're watching them, that we want them to do what they say they're going to do, which is protect and serve, not harass, profile, beat, discriminate.
Outstanding organization. How do people get in touch with Cop Watch to continue to rally around this critical issue?
Cop Watch is the tactic and the name of the coalition that is organizing lots of Cop Watches. Is People's Justice for Community Control and Police Accountability. You can email us at info@peoplesjustice.org. Let us know that you want to get involved and we'll get in touch with you.
Idris Dixon is going to also speak to us about the prominence here of members of the LGBTQH communities.
I'm the deputy director in charge of community organizing and public advocacy at the New York City Anti-Violence Project. We're here today because we really believe that Stonewall in itself was a police violence movement, and we are here to continue our community's struggle against police violence and police harassment. At the New York City Anti-Violence Project, we document instances of police violence, and we also work to advocate to improve the policies and to ensure that any police officers who do commit violent acts towards our community are held accountable. And we also work to ensure that people get the police response that they need and deserve when they are affected by violence. So we're here today, we're out, we're a member of Communities United for Police Reform, which is working to create legislation to prohibit profiling on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And we're here also to show solidarity with all communities that are impacted by police violence, because LGBTQ people, so lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and HIV-affected people are also deeply impacted by police violence, as also being people of color, people who are low-income, people are homeless. So we're just here to show our solidarity and our connection to all of these communities.
Why is it important, or are you heartened and interested in the fact that organized labor really has a presence in facilitating and participating in this march today?
Well, we are so excited because the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union has been co-chairing the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender contingent alongside with the New York City Anti-Violence Project of this march. So labor has a huge voice in the city. It's got a large organizing presence, and it's a part of how we move issues forward. LGBTQ people are workers themselves. We are part of unions, and it's really important for unions to be recognizing that stop and frisk is an issue in the city. It's an issue for their members, and it's an issue for all the communities that they represent and that we represent as well.
Thank you for speaking with us. We're here with Michael Hardy, attorney activist with the National Action Network, who has distinguished himself in fighting around issues of police abuse of power. Michael, what's significant about today?
The city and the country will see tens of thousands of people who say that we are citizens of this city, the state, and this nation, that we are not suspects, and we will not tolerate and continue to tolerate the use of stop and frisk in an unconstitutional manner. And we're going to see this policy change. We're going to see the NYPD, all citizens, and we're going to see good policing so that the people of this community no longer have to be afraid of both the cops and the robbers, but can be fully participatory citizens in the city, state, and nation.
And why don't you play host for 2 minutes and bring over our sister here?
Well, this is Nicole Bell. As you know, Nicole suffered a real tragedy in the city on her wedding day when her fiancé and husband-to-be and the father of her two daughters, Sean Bell, was killed in a 50-shot fuselage at his bachelor's party. Nicole Bell.
Nicole, the last time tragically we saw you, there was another mass demonstration around Sean Bell. Our hearts, our feelings continue to be with you. Have we moved forward? Have we progressed?
Anytime when people can gather together in these massive numbers, I think, yes, the answer is we are continuing to move forward. And now that we have some discussion about amending the stop and frisk, this is shining somewhat of a light on other families and hoping that we can prevent other tragedies like what happened to my family. I couldn't think of a better day to do this on besides Father's Day, and I'm here with my father today. And it's so significant because our men are the ones who are suffering. I think about my daughters who are growing up now without their father.
So when are you going to run for office again, my sister?
We don't know what lies in the future, but I'm happy to be here and support my community like always.
Okay, we're good to go. We're meeting under the Puerto Rican flag with Hector Figueroa, who is the Secretary Treasurer of Local 32BJ of SEIU, and his 13-year-old son. Organized labor is clearly in the house. Why don't we begin with why it was critical and why we should be so delighted that organized labor has a major presence here today. Hector?
Well, we're here on behalf of all our members, and so are the other unions. In the particular case of 32BJ, our members work 7 days a week, 24 hours throughout the city. I have received a lot of complaints from members, including members of our own executive board, who have been detained by the police, stop and frisk, for no reason other than walking in the streets at the wrong moment, at the wrong time, meeting the profile that unfortunately the police have been asked to follow, being black or Latino. And what we're saying here today is that this is an issue for working people. This is an issue of civil rights. It's an issue of making sure that no one in our community is out there on the street being a suspect for no reason at all. So we're here to defend our rights. I'm very glad that so many unions have responded, and I hope this will continue to bring together, you know, the civil rights movement and labor in the ways that we so much need now.
Hector, I know you wanted to link these issues up also with the issues of immigration and issues of detention and deportation.
People who are immigrants in this country without documents and are detained by the police now are being asked under secure communities then to be handed over to the authorities of Homeland Security, the records being shared, essentially putting them on the path for deportation. And we are saying that that is wrong. The job of the police should be to keep our streets safe from criminal activity, not to persecute undocumented workers or to blacklist our youth of color. We need to say strongly today that the time has come for our voices to be raised in an organized fashion. We can change these policies. There's nothing natural about stop and frisk, nothing natural about secure communities. They are just misguided policies. We can certainly change it if we organize.
So both the secure communities and stop and frisk are really about dragnetting, profiling people in. There are those who say, well, we don't like the excesses of stop and frisk, but these aren't about racial issues as well. What do you say to them? How do we help them understand that most fundamentally that is exactly what's going on, that it is about profiling?
We need to help them understand that profiling is much more than an inconvenience. You know, one of the problems is that people are looking at these policies as if they were just an inconvenience on people. These are actually severe violations of people's rights. This violation of the Fourth Amendment is really intimidating practices, and they have consequences. People are deported or people are put in a very dangerous situation where the police assumes the likelihood of either weapon possession and misbehavior, and when things get out of control, we end up with people dead on our streets. So what we are saying here today is that this has to really come to an end, that there are other ways to secure our streets and our cities.
How?
Community policing, ways in which the police really acts in a better organized fashion with the community. So we share with them where crimes are being committed. We share with them what our concerns are. And also the other way is creating opportunities for our youth. After school programs, education programs, opportunities, so the youth don't have to be on the streets so much of the time. We need to ask ourselves, why are young kids spending so many hours outside of their homes? Because there's very few other places they can go. So you have to have a combination of opportunities for the community to live its life as a community, and for the police to hear and plan with them how to police our streets.
And we are here with his 13-year-old son, and I'm interested in what your own thoughts about being here today are.
Well, I agree with my dad about how it breaks the Fourth Amendment, and it goes against all racial equality, and pretty much it doesn't really make sense to just stop someone for no apparent reason just because of how they look or the police suspects them. So it kind of goes against all rules, and it's very unfair.
Actor, I wanted to ask you, we're here and the labor union are supporting community initiatives here. Do you think there should be more activities of that nature?
Well, there should be more activities about this nature. I think that perhaps this is the beginning of organizing the labor movement, not just in the workplace, but also in our neighborhoods. And that's certainly what we like to start, at least in 32BJ.
And your name, my young brother?
My name is Eric.
And that is the 13-year-old son of Hector Figueroa, who is now dashing off to his many other responsibilities. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
We, of course, will continue to go to these events and bring you your sound and your sentiments on the critical issue of stopping, stop, and frisk. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.